Welcome to STEAMcast, where STEM and the arts collide. I'm your host, Dan Kostelic, and together we're going to have conversations with the brightest lights and rising stars in the fields of science, technology, engineering, the arts, and math, exploring the world that we live in, the science that makes it all possible, and the art that makes it interesting. This is episode 2, and it's part 2 of a two-part interview with Project Fibonacci founder Andy Drozd. If you didn't listen to part 1, I encourage you to go back and download that episode. However, if you like jumping into a conversation right in the middle, welcome and enjoy. That brings us into the actual philanthropic side of what you do, the Project Fibonacci Foundation. What got you into the philanthropy side of things?
Okay, well, one of the things that became very apparent to me that I became very concerned about as a business owner and as a scientist and an engineer and mathematician, all things, is that we are not engaging enough young people in the careers. There's again, that void between what you do in school and what your career becomes. We have many STEM jobs that are still unfilled throughout the country. And this is still an issue. If you read many of the trade journals in this area, you'll find that there are still issues trying to get the kids to become STEM people or pursue STEM careers. So this is very bothersome. It's very troublesome in many respects because it's telling us that there's something about the way we teach STEM that isn't quite working. So I would go to the naysayers or to those people that I wish to co-opt into thinking in a different way and present this as additional evidence that there is a problem. We are teaching them, they're interested, they seem to be looking at it as more of a hobby, not necessarily careers. And so we're not filling those future careers, we're not looking at the right kind of balanced formula for their careers and for our societies in the future. This is a fact. I can cite you statistics for New York State, but they're very much like any other state. There is a gap. There is a big gap in jobs that are filled, interests that are being pursued, the way we teach and engage students. And this is part of what I'm trying to study is how to reverse that, how to fix that, or how to fill the gap. But this now goes to your current question, too, that it really became apparent to me that we're not doing something right, or maybe something more needs to be done in a little different way. Maybe that's the better way of saying it. STEM by itself is somewhat restrictive. It doesn't bring out the other elements sufficiently, in my opinion. STEAM, however, if we explicitly bring out that A, it makes a point, it makes a statement, and it makes you think a little differently. And you may not agree with it at first, or you may totally disagree with it, or maybe you'll adapt it readily, I don't know. But when you start thinking about the humanities arts side of things and how that so fits hand in glove with the science and the STEM parts of things, I recognized this and thought to myself, well, maybe this is a way we could start filling the gap. And I became interested in initiating a cause that would look at how we can redefine STEM into more of a STEAM concept or stream where you put in research. And research can cover arts and sciences, you know, and it's got lots of connotations to it that we can pursue. So I really wanted to figure out a way that I could help. Being a modestly successful business owner, which I continue to, again, build new things and create new ideas, and we're trying to change the world in our own way to improve radio frequency communications and cyber protection and spectrum policies for future use of radio devices. We're looking at the future. So this is what continues to compel me to look at how we can get more interest from the youth to support our cause in science and engineering. But in order to do that, I need to get them more interested. I need to get them hooked into following the path to create these new radio devices and look at the future and think about things in more than just a three-dimensional way, maybe four or five-dimensional sense of thinking. So where I'm going with this is I wanted to push an agenda that right now is called STEAM, but it does bring in the non-STEM person. It makes them part of the equation. This is the important thing I'm trying to do as a philanthropic source, is to help fund efforts and also do fundraising with partners that would engage the non-STEM person in the STEM world, and at the same time engage the STEM person into the non-STEM world. So I'm trying to create this hybrid way of thinking that does go back to a little bit more of a classical way of, the liberal arts and such, but in a different modern way, which I'm still trying to help define with our partners. But it really is meant to give more opportunities to kids to get STEAM careers. Notice I'm not saying STEM careers anymore. I'm thinking STEAM careers. We cannot neglect and assume that the arts are always going to be part of STEM. We just can't. It's just not working right now. And when you start to bring out these new features and these novelties, it becomes more interesting to pursue them and ask those questions. So I'm trying to create this environment that is STEAM-oriented, that gets the kids more interested, hooks them into following these STEAM careers in the future, and continues to balance the society's way of thinking. So if you think about it, we're in a long-winded way, I'm really saying I wanted to fund work and work with partners that would help kids in a equal opportunity way to pursue anything that they wanted and not feel disenfranchised. An artist could become a STEM person, in other words. I want that person to think that way, that I can deal with some math and science. I can maybe contribute to an engineering solution, and vice versa, is how can you enrich the liberal arts world with science and math and other things so that it keeps growing on itself and keeps expanding and we get smarter, hopefully, over time and more creative and more innovative. Sounds lofty, but I really think it's a reality because we showed that this happened during the Renaissance period.
So how does entrepreneurship fit into all of this?
Oh, I think it's a really key one because you can become anything you want to be. With an entrepreneur, you're willing to do anything and take risks. You know, maybe it's somebody that wants to come up with a new type of cosmetic or a new type of fashion that's based on technology and something that's never been thought of. There have been new types of materials that have been developed that fashion designers are now using. And that's a good example of what we mean where the art and the science worlds collide. So you get the fashion designers using these scientific materials. And the scientific material developers are saying, oh, that's cool. They're using the materials that we developed in a completely different way than we intended. And this is good. So we are creating that kind of new future in that way. And every opportunity that a kid has, or anyone has for that matter, to create a new business, to take a risk, to fuse things together that maybe have never been done before in the same way. That's kind of cool. It goes back to what I was saying when we started the conversation that I am not, an actor. I'm not really a good musician. I'm a fair musician. But I keep trying to do these things and fuse different things together and find these really weird connections. And what I'm trying to do, actually, I'll give you a more concrete example, is in music, I'm actually trying to play certain mathematical beat patterns that I don't think anyone else has really tried to do before. And it's getting into some very weird sounds. And we might make a CD out of it or, put it up on iTunes. I don't know, someday. But that's the kind of thing I'm using for my example, is I'm taking the science and the math and trying to build it into my music and sort of reinterpret things and find meaning in things that maybe are hidden. I don't know. But that's sort of a little example. But I'm looking at entrepreneurs as the same way, is that the kid coming out of school, well, maybe they don't want to be a STEM person, per se. Maybe they want to be a little bit more STEAM broadened. And if they can combine different elements of the art and science worlds together to create that business that serves a good purpose, helps the economics, well, why not? That's great.
In that case, it goes back to something I was saying a little bit earlier about it being a young person's game, that young people are the ones who necessarily change the world. Yep. Let me modify that earlier statement then and saying that young thinking people, because entrepreneurs, to my way of thinking, are lifelong learners. They're willing to take a risk. Sometimes it's a very calculated risk, but they're willing to try the unknown. And that takes me into you. Your entire life, you could say, falls into entrepreneurship, but a little more broadly falls into lifelong learning. So writing down everything that you've done, you're a scientist, you're a business owner, you're a philanthropist, and with that, in terms of private charity that you've done, but also in terms of being the chair of the nonprofit educational organization, the Project Fibonacci Foundation, but you do martial arts, you do music, you're always trying something new. And I think that is a take-home point for everybody to want, whether you're making money at it in terms of a financial entrepreneur, whether it, let's call it personal entrepreneurship, it's a matter of taking ownership of your life in that way, of always wanting to try something new.
Yeah, I think that's very well stated. And it doesn't matter how old you are. I think that's a good point. The young way of thinking, I guess, that's great, yeah. When you're young, you're excited, you're exuberant, you want to try things, you're willing to take risks. And as you get older, you kind of moderate that a little bit. You kind of know what risks to take. You get a little smarter at it, perhaps. And in the end, hopefully, it's all rewarding. There are some meanders along the way. There are successes. There are small wins. There are big failures. And all of those are life lessons. But I guess the point is that, yeah, if you have that kind of young way of thinking, that novel way of thinking, no matter what age you are, I think you can be more than just one thing. And again, we've had this discussion in the past that I like it when people think about, I can be several different things. I don't like that old adage about what expert at one thing, or how does it go? It's everything.
Jack of all trades.
Jack of all trades. Thank you. Master of none. There you go. I've heard that so many times in the past. And maybe there's some truth to it if all you're doing is one thing. You know, you want to focus on that one thing. But I think we have the capacity to really do more than one thing. I don't think we should do 1,000 things. But maybe there are 3 to 5 things that we can really do somewhat in parallel that are really meaningful, that kind of dovetail together over time. And I think that if we tap into that inner strength, that understanding, and we kind of share that with others who are like-minded, that I think you will begin to find that you're much more of a contributor and have much more impact to the world around you than you ever thought. That's a cool feeling.
Yeah.
It's not a feeling of power per se, but it's a feeling of contribution. And I think that there's a difference there. Some people will exert power for their own gain, and, you know, at what cost or any cost. There are people who just feel they want to contribute, and hopefully as a positive way as possible, to maybe change a life or change a direction, or, you know, add to a positive benefit or effect in the world. And I think that's the more important one right now, is to really be that kind of contributor. And any of us, no matter what you do, I believe has a little piece in the puzzle that adds to the final end, whatever that end is, for whatever the big, you know, thing is for. But I think if you think of it that way, everybody plays a role, everybody has a part on the stage, everybody has a play in the design, everybody has an idea that contributes and helps. Some are better than others. Over time, you figure that out, but you kind of, you know, selectively work together, you know, assess things, combine them, test them, go to the next level. And all of that takes art and science.
As we're starting to wrap up here, for the general population, how important do you think it is to have scientific literacy and artistic literacy?
I would say in general, it's very important. Whether you become an artist or a scientist, or whether you become both, but not necessarily, you know, focus on one or the other too much, if you will, that's up to you.
Let's say you're doing one of the more important jobs in our society, but that we tend to ignore. You're the garbage guy.
Mm-hmm.
How important is it to have scientific or artistic literacy if that is your career, your profession?
I think that a career, again, it goes back to what I was saying earlier, that I think a career is not just one thing, one path, one thing that you do repetitively. I think we all need to always consider about growing and expanding and trying new things. I think that's an important component. And it goes back to what you said earlier about sometimes, you know, people get complacent.
Yeah.
I think that's dangerous. Never become complacent. I think you need to start have aspirations. You need to think about, well, what else could I do or try? What else could I learn? What else could I connect or associate? What could I infer or conclude? And all of that leads to, well, how can I help? How can I contribute in a positive way? How can I help? When the person stops doing those things, then they are truly complacent. And now, well, what worth is their action? I mean, they are worth, obviously, but what worth is their action or their career? Is it really helping? Or is it just doing something that's repetitive that eventually will be taken over by a robot? I mean, I know I'm being facetious, but the whole thing is that I think we can never stop thinking that way, that we should always be questioning. And I like to think of it like, as you get older, the most important thing as you get older is staying active in various ways, mentally, physically, spiritually, however you want to phrase it. As long as you stay active, interested, engaged, questioning things, that always keeps you moving and thinking and doing and new things. When you get complacent, when you stop doing those things, you become complacent, and that's when things start to rust. And that's what I would say to the garbage collector or to anyone who has any kind of career. Always aspire to be a little bit more. Try something new. Always challenge yourself. Maybe that's the key right there, challenging yourself constantly.
Well, I think at some point the robots will take over this particular job of the interviewer, and hopefully it'll be a really good-looking Cylon in that case.
Not as good-looking as you.
Oh, thank
might,
you.
It might be a Cylon that looks like you.
Yeah. I have a face built for radio, so as they used to say back when I was a kid. Now, lightning round.
Yep.
All right. So, Project Fibonacci Foundation
yep.
is 3 years old.
Yeah, well, almost going on four now, yeah.
Yeah, we're going into the fourth year of operation. Everything kicked off fall of 2015 and winter of 2016. Right. The first STEAM conference was summer of 2016. Mm-hmm. There have been three of those now. What's next? What's new?
I think we want to continue to broaden the program. So it's been largely centered on the week-long STEAM conference in the summer. And that's been geared more, as you know, towards high school and college level students. We're always trying to show them in the conference all of these different connections across the art and science worlds. And then by way of a project, they sort of bring those pieces together and present them in, as an idea. And that goes to the entrepreneurship kind of thing we were talking about earlier. That's great. We want to continue that. We want to, every year, kind of vary it a little bit. So we vary the theme, the emphasis, and the project, of course. So that's on the drawing board right now, is how we're going to continue to do that. But I think we also want to broaden the program by looking at different kinds of sub-themes. So, you know, it's very important that we get women and STEAM, women's careers and their involvement in the growth of STEAM. And again, maybe somewhat of an emphasis on the STEM, but not neglecting the artistic side of things as well. So I like to think of it as women and STEAM programs and pursuits. Looking at other things like robotics programs, we put on drone programs, and those tend to be more STEM-ish, but now we can hopefully look at how we can broaden those by looking at applications. So one of the things we're playing with right now is Mars colonization. And I brought up earlier about you need to think about many things, you know, governance, the fun side of life, putting rules and regulations in place, the technology you're going to use, how you're going to build your cities, how you're going to protect the people, but how you're going to include the entertainment and the humanities components into this whole thing. So we're looking at doing some programs with themes on that this year that are not necessarily just tied to the conference, but would be tied to other activities with drones and robotics and things like that. And also looking at a life stream series, which goes back to your point about continuing education or lifelong learning. So the life stream deals with lifelong learning in science, technology, research, engineering, arts, and the mind. So there's an important component dealing with how we are going to interface as humans with the machines of the future. There is a humanities and a science component here that is literally arts-based in many respects. How does that happen? How does it augment the human? How do you impart human perspectives to machines? I mean, it's not just a science. There's an art to this.
Yeah.
You know, and there are feelings involved and emotions and other things that we may or may not be able to capture over time. These are themes that we're going to be looking at throughout the year, and we also like to highlight high-profile speakers in our series. That's very important. One of the closing comments I want to make about our program is that, yeah, you can look at YouTube videos and you can look at all sorts of things online, and, you know, that's great. There's nothing like meeting the human being behind it, you know, and actually talking and, you know, shaking their hand and, you know, even just signing a book sometimes is just a great experience. That goes with you. You actually met that person. It's a 3D tactile kind of thing that a YouTube video cannot give you. So I feel that we've gone so far left field in focusing on digital content and digital media, and that's fine, but there's nothing like the human side. We can't, again, if you look at technology and humanities, we're trying to sort of bridge them more, bring people more into the artistic, humanity side of the equation. So it changes your life, the way you think, and it gives you a memory that may impact your way of thinking later that hopefully will be very positive and something you can share with others. So that's just another example where I'd like to go with this program.
That's pretty wonderful. That's a broad reaching. It's incredibly, what's the word I'm looking for? ambitious. Yeah. But I think it's really worthwhile. Now, final question. Favorite invention or greatest invention, not in all of history, but of the last 10 years.
Last 10 years. Wow.
Since 2009, but I'll let you go with 2008, well, since we just ended a year.
I unfortunately can't think of anything more profound right now than the iPhone.
Okay.
I hate it and I love it. For all the right and obvious reasons. I hate it because I'm constantly checking things. So I am a little addicted to it. But I don't play games on it. I don't do those kinds of things. I use it more just for information.
Oh, I totally play games on mine.
Yeah, so does my son when he can. Yeah, it's like, I get it and I understand it all. But I'm not much of a gamester, but I do like information. I like to keep current on things. I like to keep connected with family and friends. So that's important. So I think those are the most two components for me. But the iPhone kind of changed the game. In fact, it's funny that you asked the question, because part of the research I'm doing right now is looking at the origins of STEM and trying to figure out when things really took off here. Because like you said, the last 20, 25 years has really been what we've been emphasizing, STEM. And I'm trying to look at, well, what are some of the occurrences in history, going back to that point about understanding history, what happened over the past 20, 25 years that picked these things up?
You know? Got the internet?
Yeah, the internet, obviously. But again, the cell phone, and in particular, the iPhone in 2007. Right away, all of a sudden, we started focusing on STEM. And if you go back to Steve Jobs and Apple, you know, we all know, yeah, they were great software designers and engineers, and, you know, they put that side of their experience on the table. But Jobs is really good at the design part.
At the aesthetic.
The aesthetic, the art. He was able to combine that. So he's kind of like one of our gurus of the whole STEAM concept and movement. Yeah, that's a good example of where I have a good utility in my hand. It's not too obtrusive. Yeah, it gets in the way sometimes of conversations and things, but it's a useful device.
And we're asking you to please hold on to it, because you're probably going to be listening to this podcast on it. So.
Excellent. Yes.
Andy, thank you for being on.
Yeah, thanks a lot. This is great.
The inaugural episode of STEAMcast.
I want to thank you for doing this, because I think you're spreading a really important message. And I think you are going to be changing the world, hopefully for the better in a lot of respects.
Hopefully. And I hope they put my face up on like a jello mold version of Mount Rushmore.
Well,
so it's both beautiful and edible.
I'll tell you, if not that, I would love to see eventually, you know, you being in charge of a TV show that deals with this kind of stuff. So we can go around the world and sort of see what people are doing in the STEAM realm, if you will.
That'd be fun.
That'd be kind of cool.
That'd be cool. Well, your mouth to some TV producers' ears. Hopefully they're in our tens of listeners. All right.
That's where we'll end for today. Once again, thank you to Project Fibonacci founder Andy Droz for joining us here on STEAMcast, kicking us off with a fantastic two-part interview as our pilot episode. Just a reminder, Andy is an engineer. He is a scientist, an entrepreneur. He's an amateur musician. He's a philanthropist with an aim towards using STEAM education as a catalyst for a better world. Join us next Monday, where we're going to interview Nathan McDonald and Bryant Wysocki, two research engineers. They're going to be talking to us about neuroplasticity. STEAMcast is a production of the Project Fibonacci Foundation, a 501c3 nonprofit educational organization whose mission is to introduce our youth to a culture of interdisciplinary STEAM learning, teaching them to become creative, independent leaders of community resurgence. You can learn more by going to projectfibonacci.org. STEAMcast was written, produced, and hosted by me, Dan Kostelic. You can follow me on Twitter at Dan Kostelic. Technical support was by Andrew Berger. The music that opens and closes the show is by The Live and Breathe from the album Reet. You can find them on iTunes or wherever you listen to music. Please subscribe to the show on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, Spotify, and Google Play Music, and rate the show 5 stars. It really helps us move up the charts and get discovered. And don't forget to follow us on Twitter. We're at ProFibonacci. That's ProFibonacci. Thanks for listening, and keep moving forward, full steam ahead.